Egg cracks. Tubular body squirms. Microscopic fangs first, she drags her temporary form through the dirt, then, suckling on decay, prepares for fossilizing. Her flourishing will be welcomed like brown blossom in a world of candy floss lovers. This is no Anderson fairy tale transformation. This is maggot to blue bottle. They'll never call her beautiful, but she'll have eyes like flashing lava and armor the color of peacock feathers. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really, like, very excited to be here. I would have loved to have been with you in person, especially because I've never been to Ireland and it looks beautiful. But also, particularly in Cork, I hear the food's amazing and I love food. So hopefully in the future, I'll be able to come and see you. So I like, in my poetry, like, questioning things that we take for granted as society, saying that's normal. So you'll probably find that going a lot. This is called Sex Tips or The Mating of Leopard Slugs. If you don't know what a leopard slug is, there's a great video on YouTube that the BBC put out. Forget Google or the swinging saloon doors of Amsterdam. For real sex tips, venture into the woods. You must do this at night after slipping into a heavily fleeced coat. Pack a small torch and either a flask of milky tea or two miniature gins. Do not take salt. Once you arrive, search among the dense foliage of the woodland floor. Lift your hand, let your lips curl in mild revulsion as you note the iridescent mucus embracing your fingertips. Follow this slimy path until you reach a thick-limbed branch. Beneath that branch are two squelching, circling forms. Their leopard print slug tongues dressing each other in moist praise. You'll notice their ash marbled backs shimmering under the dull light of your torch. Two more hours will pass before these nocturnal dancers slide upwards. Watch as saturated in pleasure they descend, acrobats twirling on a ribbon of joint secretion. Celeste phalluses will emerge from each head, stretching the full length of their sculpture. Marvel at this coiled pirouetting mass, the exploratory entwining of hot blue. Witness the squelching spread of mucus petals into a globular crescendo. Finally, see their slow, slithering retreat, their shrinking, collapsing bodies separating. Go home. Dispose of Cosmopolitan magazine. Before going into, thank you, because I can't hear you, I'm not leaving room to clap, but I thank you. before going into sort of poetry and arts as a more permanent thing, I used to teach, and it was very frustrating. The most frustrating thing is not teaching what you think is important, but teaching what you're told is important. This is progress report. In the first term, I taught you to kill sunflowers. We named the survivors anomalies, then passed round the bin bag. Percentages were skipped because they're only worth one mark, but we doubled up on fronted adverbials and paradigms, which impressed the visiting author because she'd never heard of them. The head treated us to the new cut and paste Oxford dictionaries because it meant you could spell celebrity without having to ask me, and it saved discussing the differences between magpies and ravens when you just call them birds anyway. In the spring, I was meant to teach den building, but because it was spitting, we settled for using unsharpened pencils to scratch out our designs onto one dead tree of A4 each. After finishing early, I asked you to write a recount of your favourite parts of the year so far. In the whole class example, I began with the sunflowers, but the only adjectives you could suggest were nanoscopic and dilapidated. When I rolled my eyes and turned to Google Images, you gasped at the warmness of their petals, the cuddling seeds. You all agreed that if you ever saw one in real life, you'd probably say they were quite beautiful. And I've got obviously the standard COVID poem now. I've got one for tomorrow, so if you're there, there's a different one. You know, we've all got to have a COVID poem. This is called Does Spaghetti Really Have an Expiry Date? And it was based on my true experience of COVID. Day 17. I start in the kitchen. take out every dented tin and sunflower patterned plate. I ask Google if Safeway spaghetti really has an expiry date. One cupboard contains metallic blue touch-up from two cars ago, eight pesetas and a disc for installing Windows XP. That night I removed tin peas from my shopping list and cooked spag bol for dinner. I don't know why, but neither of us had stomach ache, so Google must have been right about the pasta. Day 18. Placing 10 tubs on the breakfast table. I remember Nan bringing them home, her hands smoothing sticky labels onto their lids, using her best biro and capital letters to write earrings, hair clips, nail varnish. I recall her lining them up on my dressing table, pointing the pen tip my way and saying, "And don't you get let it get into that state again." I offer an apologetic shrug to the urn on the bookshelf. The first box, Nail Polish, is a home-based colour chart of early noughties Barbie pinks and glow stick greens. On opening, the contents cling to hardened bristles and glob on my fingertips like marmalade. This time I don't need Google. The next few hours are spent gently tipping polish remover into every pot of gloop in an attempt to resuscitate them. That night I paint each toenail a different colour. I don't understand why remover resurrects polish, but I do know that Nans have many useful tips. Day 19. I take two buckets of warm bubbles to the bathroom. The window sill has long been a museum of discarded bottle lids and fossilised soap stains. I turn the tap on, cold water fizzes into the tub. At some point, I notice the black speck of a fly floating towards the far end. With my palm flat, I scoop it out. Spread its sodden wings apart with my fingernails and blow. Again, again, willing life back into its little lungs until one leg twitches. I finally breathe out, not knowing why it's so important, just knowing that it is. I like strange little facts, so this is based on one of those and fits in nicely with our space conversation from earlier. If our nearest star takes 6 minutes to send solar flare fingers to Earth, the sun could be dead and we'd still have time to boil eggs before noticing. That 6 minutes above us, our ovoid life source had shattered, flame shards scattering across milky black abyss, while we teaspoon gritty splinters off rubbery white spheres. This one's based on a true story. Well, the first bit is, and then obviously, you know, poetic license. I went to a gym and, you know, which I don't do regularly, but I went and did the gym bit and then I went what I'd actually gone for, which was the cake and hot chocolate at the cafe afterwards, because that's what you do, isn't it? I think, unless I'm wrong. Anyway, there's a woman who came in the queue before me. Like I was stood there and she butted in, which really irritated me because I hate rudeness, but also hate confrontation. So I just sort of tutted. And then she turned around and I will probably never get over this. She went, "I think I should go first, don't you?" And I let her go first, but I did think, "You're going to be in a poem. And here is that poem." So I don't know who she is, but this is for her. "I think I should go first, don't you? I'd been considering which overpriced oatcake to choose as you slipped into the half space in front of me. My stuttering reply dies as you repeat, 'I think I should go first.' I nod. You should go first. You should go first because you pay a monthly direct debit to this gym instead of using a free guest pass you picked up in the community centre raffle. You should go first because the woman serving has smiled at you from across this counter for over 2 years and her daughter looks a little bit like your daughter. You should go first because you are branded with designer sweatbands and own a keyless car that you remember to vacuum before it looks like it needs it. You should go first because when you call your dog's name in the park, he comes back to you instead of digging up the kids' play area. You should go first because you know they're called gilets, not body warmers. You can spell pretentious without having to Google it and can bake banana bread without looking up the recipe. You should go first because you got married on a sunny day with a brass band and honeymooned in Cape Verde instead of mistaking it for a type of pasta at a pub quiz. You should go first because you remembered to wear a blue dress on polling day and you've never got changed in a train toilet or come home looking like that girl off the drink aware advert. you should go first because you have lavender liners in your underwear drawer and your nasal passages recognise the scent of Dior but have yet to experience Oxfam's washing powder. You should go first because shops sell keyrings with your name on them and people pronounce it without assistance and the man at Starbucks writes it correctly on the cup. You should go first because you know Manet did portraits and Monet did flowers. You know which knife to use first at dinner parties and that people who get stopped by police must deserve it. You should go first because you had skiing lessons when you were six and ever since you've known that life's a bespoke slide for you to traverse. You should go first because when the others in this queue look between me and you, they already know all of these things. They know who goes first. Oh, thanks for the nice comments. I've just seen them popping up in the chat there. I also love bird spotting, you know, which you don't tend to talk about too much because you get like plonked in with train spotters and, you know, other people. But I do. And so this poem is about a bird, but also not. Winter plumage. Soon the female turnstone's plumage will be tree trunk brown. A green anorak man mimics the quit, quit, quit of her call, wiggles his fingers to tempt her. She doesn't go. Another feather falls. Seawater sticks it to a nearby pebble. Her probing bill continues spearing the space between stones, scooping mollusks from their mantles. Her bill snaps shut around the sleeping seaweed's throat. When food gets sparse, she'll leave these splintered shell segments in favour of chip wrapper innards. Once she feasted on the cove-trapped corpse of a fisherman. Bloated fingers twitched as she picked at the tendons. The green anorak man mimics her call. Quit, quit, quit. He hears wrong. A gargling laugh rattles around the inside of her throat. Another white feather frees itself, flying towards the sun. She screeches after it, up, up, up. Another favourite thing is Alice in Wonderland. And I think a lot of poets can get on board with that one because we have interesting minds. Our minds are fun, strange places. And I guess that's why we kind of relate to it. So I take Alice's and just make them different sort of females. And so this is one of my Alice's. This is called Out of Luck Alice. And I'm going to dedicate this to two people who are giving me thumbs up, Anne and Tracy, because they always say that's my favourite. Out of Luck Alice. Caterpillar was on his second cigar. Alice, down to her last fiver, watched hazy mists around her, cloud her from underpaid rent and overpaid men. Smoke swirled, turning into points around stilettos the adverts told her to wear. Caterpillar motioned her over with 12 of his arms, offered her a pint in exchange for a picture. Well, thought Alice, it's only a picture. And maybe you think it's only a drink, but if you ignore your prejudice against Alice's who rely on juices and half-smoked spliffs to assist in the fight against two small homes with windows that don't close, concrete gardens set on the margins of a society that's run by blue ties and the BBC who only ever feature where you live in when there's been a stabbing, then maybe you'll start to see where Alice is going. Caterpillar had 100 hands, asked if he could put just 3 on her lap in exchange for a full pack of fags and £10. Well, thought Alice, it's only a few hands out of a whole caterpillar of arms. And maybe you think it's only fags and a tenner, but if you've never lived with a fridge that's in the red and a bed that's a mattress on the floor with your last blood-spotted note rolled into the fetal position in your purse, then... Caterpillar educated Alice about 5-bedroom yachts and where's best to stay in Vegas and how it's advisable to take lessons before taking to ski slopes. And would she mind coming back to his to lie naked on lettuce, blow smoke rings while he cocoons her in exchange for shoes better than those, a working credit card weekend away? Well, thought Alice, it's only me. And maybe you think, but you don't, do you? Because you don't like thinking about Alice. Cheers. The last couple that I've got are set in Coventry. I always accidentally end up writing about the Midlands, that or Wales, which is basically where you go on holiday if you're from the Midlands. I come from, well, on one, on the Coventry side of my family, and I say that like there's an exotic side of the family, the other side is from Birmingham, but the Coventry side of the family, I come from a long line of people who worked in factories. My granddad was a draftsman for Massey Ferguson's, and so this that's sort of the background behind this poem really, because as you may well be aware, we had this big, like, industry in Coventry of machinery, and that's gone now. We were the parts that designed the parts that made the parts. Our 2B pencils joined screws and chains and levers, turned rods and cogs that birthed tractors. Tractors as red and British as post boxes, or as grey as the smoke from our pipes. TE20, 35X, 290, 830 till 430. We worked in parts of inches, then parts of millimetres. We were the base units of the agricultural world and could trace our family trees through Roots and Daimler. We're born from Humbers and Singers, and we still whistled and sang after emergency meetings in cold community centres where drafts of a new build estate the size of a factory were displayed to us. We were the parts that watched the parts being blown apart. Our 2B pencils stowed behind our ears as they inserted the dynamite under the old office tower. Only then did we realise our castles were as delicate as paper, that we could be ripped from drawing boards and discarded. Thank you. This is my last one. I just want to say thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm going to claim this is my first international gig, even if I'm in my bedroom, because, like, video version of me has now been to Ireland, which is great. That's really exciting. It's not quite the what we envisaged, but I did, and I'm so sorry because this is probably a really awful thing to do, but I did, in honor of you guys, have a Guinness, but I had to get it out of a can and pour it into a glass because that's all that was available at the local shop. So one day I hope I'm going to get to try a real one over with you. Until then, I'd like to thank both the Coventry and the Cork organisers of this. It really is a pleasure to be part of. You've been lovely. Thank you so much for your kind comments and the nice facial expressions and clapping. And this features sort of more of that Coventry self-deprecating humour, but this also links nicely to your lovely country, because one of the things you have gifted us is the place where my brother works, which is Boyle Sports. He's the manager and he runs the Boyle, so he definitely doesn't own it. He runs the Boyle Sports in the centre of Coventry. And it's fabulous. It's like a social club as much as somewhere where we can place bets. So I wrote this, sat in the bookies for a whole afternoon, because I do quite often just go in and just pop in and say hello to everyone, because it's like a club of people. So I'll finish on this one. The walls are papered with today's fixtures, corners curling towards the King Kong-sized Ryan Giggs spread across four TV screens. He's silently analysing a match that no one watched. Mac shakes his head. Never trust a man who takes his brother's wife to bed, he says. A flat cap holds Big Mike's spot as he fills another cup with instant caffeine, a walking cane and cold curry takeaway wait by the door. We almost forget how it feels to be lonely. Beardy Chris wears his new blue shirt that states he's proud to serve. The message hasn't made it to his face, but we love him anyway because he gives free credits and hates John Terry. Tony shows off new trainers. There's a hum of appreciation when she says they cost less than a tenner. She wiggles them at the windows, admires their shiny, smooth reflection in the new glass, and we almost forget there were ever bullet holes. Paper snowballs of old dreams litter the floor. We keep feeding our notes into this backstreet Las Vegas. Pirate roulette is due soon due a payout, and when it does, we'll almost forget how it feels to lose. Until then, Bingo 1.6 assigns amounts that no one wins to numbers no one's picked, but we still play because we know better than most that life is a lottery, and he's running at Limerick in the 8:53. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Good night.